The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, ACR and TuneIn Radio. Lots of tweets on the monologue. It's at Richie Allen Show. Unsurprisingly, even many of you, absolutely dismayed by the coverage of the alleged chemical attack in Syria today. To see what other people are tweeting, it's very simple. Just go to twitter.com and in search Twitter, just put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you will see what other people are saying and you can engage with them. My first guest is no stranger to you. I've known him a number of years now. He's a British land rights activist. He is a historian, a real historian, a terrific journalist, and he presents the politics show for BCFM every week. Of course, I will tweet links to that. A lot going on today and in recent days. Looking to get his take on all of that. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling, who's been in New Zealand of late. Tony, welcome back.
Hi there. Yes. Hi. Yeah. This attack today. I've just been watching Channel 4 News for my sins. They were announcing it as a Syrian attack. In other words, an attack by Syria. And this is just, you know, it's not only bad journalism. It's a deliberate attempt to pin the blame. Whether or not this actually, you know, is a chemical attack, it seems isn't even sure. And yet, despite that fact, they're already at ITN pinning the blame on President Assad. We had an MP on as well saying, hey, guys, it's time for a regime change in Syria. We've got to get rid of this guy. Assad must go. Now, even Boris Johnson isn't silly enough, or Rex Tillerson in the US, to now be following that policy. So whoever's behind this, it seems, is, you know, not even aligned with official British and American policy. So, you know, they're trying to kick that policy back in again. So very difficult to know what's happened. It does look as if there was an attack this morning. It's obviously not identified which aircraft dropped this bomb, or if it was dropped from an aircraft. But also Lindsay Hilson on Channel 4 News completely ignored the fact that Carla Del Ponte at the United Nations blamed the 2013 chemical weapons attack directly onto the rebels, as did one of the best investigative journalists in the United States. So it's Seymour Hersh. So all these facts are just completely ignored, and that is supposed to be news. Now, you and I are watching this, and I think there are probably millions of others across the world that are watching the news about the Syrian attack, saying, here we go again. Here's the press trying to start a war. I don't know if you can remember the comedy program in the 1990s with Chris Morris. He actually does a sequence. You can watch it on YouTube. Fantastic clip where he actually starts a war on live television. He gets these two guys fighting, and he actually gets the foreign minister of Britain or somewhere to declare war live. Yes. On the air, you know, and they've already got the studio pre-arranged ready for the war scenes. So this is exactly what we're seeing tonight on Channel 4 News, Richie.
How depressing is it for you, a man who worked and cut his teeth at the BBC, to observe the behaviour of BBC presenters and foreign correspondents, who on the one hand, early on in their reports, Tony, say that the United Nations has called for detailed forensic analysis of the area, which is fair enough. Nobody would argue with that. But within 20 seconds of that, the reporter and the studio correspondent for the BBC are basically ignoring the call for an investigation, preempting it by saying, well, it's obviously the regime. It's obviously the regime. The regime has previous. In fact, a BBC correspondent said on the 6 o'clock news today, he basically said this goes back to the red line comment from Barack Obama, meaning nothing. In other words, the Syrian regime, in inverted commas, feels that it can do whatever it bloody well likes. How depressing, as a former BBC journalist, is it for you to see that nonsense?
Actually, it just makes me angry because, you know, I'm part of the Professional Journalists Association, the National Union of Journalists, and we are, you know, constantly trying to get people to report fairly. I think you know, it's largely to do with the fact that the control of the media. I mean, look, this was Goebbels' territory in the Second World War, and of course the British did a lot of propaganda too during World War II. But that is where we are now. And you know, the amazing thing, and it doesn't actually depress me, because I can see, in a way, that the press is the only people who are really saying this stuff now. Even the British military are advising the Foreign Office, well, because of the Russians now backing Assad, I'm afraid we won't be able to kick him out like we did Gaddafi. And so there's a sort of realism has set in Whitehall, which is quite sensible. And it has to be said, in the US too, over Syria. But the media are still at it. And no, I don't actually find it depressing, because in a way I look at it and I think, well, this is just a large ditch attempt in order to swing public opinion, whereas actually most of the politicians are already convinced that this isn't going to happen. Most of the military, more importantly, because they are the people that make these sorts of decisions about whether a war is going to be working or feasible. What does worry me is news we've had locally here in the West Country tonight. I think it's about 300-400 soldiers from the Rifles being deployed to Estonia. And, you know, this is just idiotic, saying, oh, the threat of Russian aggression, you know, so as if Russia is going to invade us. You know, this is going back to the whole crazy Cold War rhetoric. And you know what I think is, if you look at the way that NATO has expanded west since the 1980s and the fall of the Berlin Wall, what they've been doing is they've been quietly getting everyone to join NATO, bribing them, whatever, persuading these Eastern European countries, and including obviously the old East Germany, at Romania, Hungary, these countries to join NATO, saying, oh, well, you know, you obviously don't want to be allied with Russia. And they have some sympathy with that, because Russia was an occupying force, an empire in their countries. And now they're right up to the border of Russia, including NATO exercises and operations in Ukraine. What they're doing is they're actually now deploying, Richie. Yeah, so a lot of the time it's been just bring these people into NATO, bring these people into NATO. And now US and British forces, and the British is the biggest force in NATO, are actually deploying to the Russian border. And yeah, they're trying to say that this is somehow Russian aggression. Now, yes, things have gone not very well in Syria for the Western forces. And I think now they're looking at, right, OK, now it's time to go for regime change in Moscow.
You know what, Tony, you're absolutely right. And the governments, the puppet governments of countries like Estonia, now Ukraine, of course, we're not going to waste time telling our listeners what they already know about the overthrow of Yanukovych in Ukraine and who did that and the neocon forces behind it. You're absolutely spot on, and promises were made at the end of the Cold War that NATO wouldn't advance any further east. They've surrounded Russia. But I'm going to slightly disagree with you on Syria, Tone.
Good.
I think we know through the Wahhabi jihadists, we know the West and NATO countries wanted to get rid of Assad using the creation of the so-called Islamic State. They were certain that it would work. I think you absolutely spot on. Russia has completely thrown a spanner in that works. What I think we're going to see, Tony, is, and I think it does have the backing and the support of the neocons that Donald Trump has unfortunately surrounded himself with, I think what we're going to see from here on in the next couple of weeks, we're going to hear no fly zone. We have the Syrian white helmets, the supposed you know, do-gooders, wonderful volunteers, and all
look,
of that.
No fly zone is simply not going to work. I mean, that means air war with the Russians, and the Russians are certainly not going to give over control of the skies. What they've been doing is they've been allowing the NATO countries to fly missions. But if you start to say no fly zone, the Russians will quite obviously and quite rightly contest that. If they want a confrontation with Russia, they will do that. But I don't think it's honestly politically possible for them to persuade the Western politicians or the Western military to go for a confrontation with Russia, because the kit that we've got is simply not up to the job. Whether or not you think that their principle is right to fight Russia, of course it's not, but some people think it is.
Yeah.
The kit will not do the job. The Russian kit is far, far better than our kit. It's simply what we've got in the West is a system of totally corrupt private companies building technology like the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, which is even the US senior US
as people who assess these things in the Pentagon have said, this thing is just not worth deploying because it's just not working, even though it costs multi-millions of pounds, because Lockheed Martin are more interested in making money than they are in winning wars. And they will get the military to buy any old rubbish. And when it actually comes down to a fight, I think the Russians will beat them.
Let me put a counterpoint to that.
The military will be saying that too. So I don't think that they would go for a confrontation in Syria right now, Richie.
And you might be right, but let me challenge that. Why then have we seen, since Russia intervened on the part of the Assad government, why have we seen a constant attempt to undermine Russia politically, economically?
Because they're in denial about Syria. Syria is lost. The battle for to take over Assad is lost. All they can do now is what they've been doing in places like Libya, which is to try and just annihilate the country. You know, that is to say, deny it.
The country, yeah. But yeah, I wasn't finished, Owen. I think we agree on this. I wasn't finished. That has steadily increased and increased and increased and increased. But for what reason? Why, if they're not going to do anything, why the constant linking Russia, right?
Syria always was crucial to the plans of the neocons. I mean, all this, I'm sure you remember Wesley Clark's statement about 7 countries in 5 years.
Yeah.
Syria really was crucial because, of course, it's right next to Israel. There's already a dispute with Israel, and in many ways, it's Israeli interests that have been driving these policies, incredibly enough, from the US and from Britain, to intervene to help Israel to get a bit of Lebensraum, as Hitler used to call it. That is to say, Israel wants to expand. It wants to expand. It's already expanded into the Golan Heights. It wants to expand into Iraq, Syria, and expand its borders. And that's, I think, what this has really been about. But the Russians are not going to give up their bases in Syria, most importantly because the naval base at Tarsus is really crucial in controlling the Eastern Mediterranean, giving the Russians a base there, just as important as the Black Sea and Crimea were to the Russian strategic forces. And so now the Russians are engaged, and they've actually committed themselves a couple of years ago, didn't they, to Syria. There really is only any kind of attempt to take the country is going to mean global confrontation, possibly nuclear confrontation with the Russians. And the British and the American military are quite rightly saying, look, this is crazy. Gaddafi is one thing, Saddam was another thing, but this is just a war too far. We're not doing it because we'll lose. So that's essentially where I'm coming from, Richie.
Yeah, I mean, I've had Senator Richard Black on from Virginia, former decorated Vietnam helicopter pilot, and he's said on this program very recently, as has Ray McGovern, former CIA legend, they now believe, Tony, that unfortunately the elite, or the elites, whatever we want to call them, the Illuminati, whatever we want to call them, they do want a protracted and possibly a deadly confrontation with Russia. And it's staggering to hear people of that ilk say that they believe, and this guy's on, he's there, he's got his ear to the ground in DC, and he's saying, I'm convinced that they are pushing for maybe not nuclear conflict, because none of them believe that what we're going to see is the deployment of nuclear weapons, but either multiple proxy wars fought in various countries in the region, maybe in Ukraine, maybe in Iran, Tony. We've not mentioned Iran yet. Maybe that sort of a war, and that could escalate steadily over 2 or 3 years. What do you think?
Yep, feasible, but I honestly don't think that the any kind of sensible military, and there are quite a lot of them, would go along with that. I really don't know what's going to happen with Iran. Obviously, the attitude of Trump, the new Trump administration, is more negative towards Iran. But I think it's important to get back to what is driving this. And there are some problems. There is some fracturing of the relations between Israel and the outside world. We just had an announcement, I think it was this morning, with the UN condemning all the new settlements that the Israelis have decided to implement. And that, I think, is at the root of a lot of this, is this apparent. I mean, it's fundamentalism, isn't it? I mean, that's the way I see it. It's basically Israeli or Jewish fundamentalism. Really, more no, that's not true. Zionist fundamentalism, where people are just completely committed to the idea of the expansion of Israel and that Israel can do no wrong, that Netanyahu can do no wrong. He's almost like God on earth, you know. This guy, seems to me to be what's really been driving this. This kind of the fundamentalism that's never spoken about in the mainstream press. And, you know, that is also another thing I was looking at today, if you don't mind me just changing the subject a bit, was back to the London Westminster attacks, was, and there's been lots of talk about the knives on the ground, which had no blood on them, very much looking as if this thing is in some way staged. But I would just link that back to the recent case in Israel of the Palestinian who was shot in the head by an Israeli soldier. You know, very brave, these soldiers, shooting civilians in the head.
Yeah.
And the knife the knife being kicked towards the guy. And, of course, the news went around the world at the time. Oh, the guy is a knife attacker. And so, you know, these brave soldiers dealt with this knife attacker. Of course, he had no knife. The knife was carried by Israeli soldiers. It was then dropped on the ground and kicked towards the guy after he'd been shot. So, you know, this is the sort of thing we're dealing with, possibly in London. I looked at these pictures of the knife with no blood that has supposedly just been used to kill a policeman, and that's exactly what I just thought of. This is what Israelis have been doing.
It's interesting, isn't it, Tony? You've had a number of people contact the program the last few days saying that they are not happy with certain images and certain moving pictures. I don't know, Tony. I think when I looked at it, you're asking some very good questions, and the photographs of the knives are strange. There's no doubt about that. One of the things I've been looking into over the last year or so is mind control and the use of patsies to carry out these acts and then to later on blame, obviously, a group like Islamic State. And then we know what comes next, the hyper-militarization of the police and, you know, a police day. I mean, what's going on in Paris is staggering. My better half is French. She was back there a few weeks ago with her company. She cannot believe that the capital city is under the control of the military. Who would have believed it? But it is. You know, you might very well be right, and our listeners might be. And most of our listeners agree with you. They think that it stinks, that attack last week or the week before, and it has all the hallmarks of something which didn't happen at all, like Boston and all of that. I always look, Tony, at the guy had, you know, he was away. He had a bit of a violent past. He was taken away. He was in prison.
A very violent past.
And then he was on, we know he was on antipsychotic medication. We know this to be true. And I look at the manipulation of guys like that. And, you know, how difficult is it for them to get a guy to drive a car like a lunatic on a bridge? I don't know. I mean, that could have happened, that part. But the murder of the policeman might not have happened at all. These are crazy times. And while all this is going on today, and you can stay with that if you want, but I did want to mention, while we're talking about our values and our shared values and the reason this nonsense that we get from our governments about why they want to kill us, our Prime Minister is in, I think she was in Jordan today, she's off to Saudi Arabia tomorrow, and the impotent, weak, spineless, gutless press are only tiptoeing around the area of human rights, Tony.
Well, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Isn't
appalling.
It?
Because the Saudis, I mean, you know, it's very easy to blame the Saudis, but the Saudis have been kind of entrapped. Okay, so the Brits, this is the only country in the world which is named after its ruling family, the Al Saud family, installed by the Brits back at the end of the First World War. And this family has been being nurtured ever since for this, I think, part of a long-term conspiracy. First of all, we never hear anything about, you know, that there needs to be regime change in this undemocratic country,
no.
Which, of course, there needs to be. It's in a terrible state now, Saudi Arabia, with the slaughter of Yemen. But I just think that with this visit by Theresa May, we had a similar thing a few years ago with David Cameron going over there just before the Yemen war started.
That's right.
You know, doing deals to try and sell British arms. Of course, they've been very successful. I honestly think that the people that drive these trade deals, and the government particularly, and the civil service around all these deals, are looking at Britain as unique selling point, as, listen, we will supply arms to anybody. We don't care who it is. They're making £3.3 billion pounds a year of arms sales to Saudi Arabia right now, and those arms are being assisted by I think it's about 75 to 100 British forces personnel paid, salaries paid by our taxpayers' money, to aid in the targeting of civilians in Yemen. Now, this is an appalling state of affairs, and it's quite right. It was great to hear yesterday the Metropolitan Police officially announcing that they are investigating its specific individuals in Britain for approving arms sales to war criminals in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, Downing Street denied it. I don't know if you saw this yesterday.
I didn't, Tony, no. This is fascinating.
Quickly denied it. But, of course, the Met, what the Met are saying to the press is absolutely true. They are investigating it. I don't know who it was, but some campaign groups have been supplying pretty strong, well, very strong, photographic, well-prepared evidence to the police, and the police are doing their job. They're saying, well, let's have a look at this. This looks like war crimes. Who is it that's helping with this in Britain? And we're going to investigate it. And Downing Street, you know, this is what they always do when they issue a denial, just to try and kill the story. But yeah, it's an appalling state of affairs to have the Prime Minister out there. Look, don't forget about her husband, Philip May. He's a senior partner in Capital Group in Los Angeles, and Capital Group are a major investor in all sorts of hideous things, including Big Pharma, the company, I think it's Merck.
Yeah,
that is behind a lot of these vaccines and the MMR jabs, things like that. And also arms companies like Lockheed Martin, massive shareholders in Lockheed Martin, and that's her husband. So you have to wonder who's wearing the trousers, actually. And is it Theresa May going out there representing the British public, or is she going out there representing her hubby?
Tony Gosling is on the line, folks. It's exactly 18 minutes to the top of the hour. We're live. It's great to have Tony back. It's been a while since he was on the programme. Check him out, BCFM, the politics show, every week. I'll tweet links to that. He's been in New Zealand recently. He's just back. A big news story today, chemical attack allegedly in Syria. It's being blamed on the Assad government, despite the United Nations acknowledging that they have to look at it. Despite the evidence presented by the BBC coming from Rami Abdul Rahman, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, is one man. It's like the People's Front of Judea. He's sitting over there. That's him. One guy, Rami Abdul Rahman, who we believe, if he was in Syria today, would be in prison. It's staggering stuff. This is the levels the media has been reduced to in this country. Big story. We've just been talking about Theresa May's visit to Saudi Arabia. Tony's been talking about the destruction of Yemen, overseen by British officers over there. Tony, what do you make of what's happened in the United States? And what part do you expect? I mean, when Donald Trump got elected, in the campaign or on the campaign trail, he was very big on interventionism is over. Meddling and interfering is over. He strongly said whenever he got the opportunity that Iraq and Libya were disasters. They were disasters. They were dreadful. We shouldn't do any of that. Now, today, Sean Spicer has come out and basically blamed the Assad regime, in inverted commas, for doing it. What about Trump? Who is the real Trump, Tony?
What about the Trump regime, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's done completely opposite, really, of what he said during the campaign. One thing I would point out is, which many people have missed, is, you know, one of the major planks of his campaign was to do with press regulation, wasn't it? And the fake news peddling by CNN, blah, blah, blah. And he was saying, well, you know, we are going to actually clean up the press, blah, blah. Well, Just yesterday, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, announced that they were going to be scrapping some of the most important rules for cross-media, for ownership of television stations. So, say, for example, MSNBC and CNN wanted to merge, they could do, into one giant super propaganda channel. So that is just completely opposite of what he was campaigning for election as president. This is the Trump. I think what's happened is, I mean, this is just my honest view about Trump, is he's a bit of mafia businessman. And William Engdahl wrote a fantastic article, but any of your listeners want to dial it up. It's called A Mafia Don with a Pompadour about Trump. And it goes into some of his background. Of course, he's been bankrupt several times, but, you know, he's basically made his success through his mafia contacts and through, you know, organized crime. And but he's not the brightest in the room. Yeah. So I think what's happened is they brought somebody in who they think would be aggressive where necessary and has got some sort of resentment towards Russia, Eastern Europe. Now, of course, his wife, when she was living in Eastern Europe, was working as an escort girl. There must be all sorts of horrible things that she got up to, potential things that Trump can be used to or can be used to bash Trump with, you know, smear him. And that's the sort of thing I think that goes on nowadays, is that the powers that be will come up to Trump and they'll say, well, look, we're going for this war, blah, 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 we want this to happen. And he says, well, no, I don't want to do it. Anyway, I said, well, yeah, but look, we've got this on your wife, yeah? And you remember, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't go along with what we're saying, it's basically blackmail. You know, this is a language that Trump will understand. Okay, I better do it. You, the guys, are really in charge here. So, although I think he starts off as all these big politicians do with great intentions, Hillary Clinton stole the nomination for Donald Trump from Bernie Sanders. So there was no real democracy in those elections. All we got was the possibly lesser of two maniacs.
Tony's website, well, you can find Tony at, there's a number of websites, but I'm going to give you this one, thisweek.org.uk, thisweek.org.uk. You can also find Tony at bilderberg.org. Tony, just before, we've got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, just Bilderberg. Have you got the info about this year's meeting being in the US?
You read my mind. You read my mind, my friend. That's what I was going to
come to. Yeah, I mean, I haven't absolutely got it 100% confirmed, but several of us have been looking into it. It does look as if it's going to be in Chantilly again. And we've got the dates, although I don't have them off right with me right this second. So if you go on to Bilderberg.org's forum, you'll find the information about that there. If you just go on to the guest book forum, it says at the top.
Do you know what, Tony?
You'll see all the details there.
Do you know what? It's been so long since I spoke about Bilderberg as a topic on the program. I think you might have been on the last time I did. Do you want to give a Cliff Note 30-second explanation of what Bilderberg is?
Sure, yeah. They're basically the NATO lobby of politics. Kissinger is one of the key figures. For many years, he's been in charge. David Rockefeller was one of the big funders of it. He's from the Rockefeller dynasty, who started with Standard Oil in the early 1900s, was broken up, Standard Oil, because it was an octopus monopoly taking over everything, oil fields, petrol stations, railways, everything that was to do with the oil industry, transportation. They were buying it all up. And so it was broken up under the antitrust laws. The only thing was that Rockefeller family kept all the shares in all the various different companies like Caltex and Exxon. Oh, gosh, there are many other oil company logos, which all they really did is they separated Standard Oil into various different logos. So Rockefeller was behind it, and he's died just recently, David Rockefeller. It's interesting to see who's taken over, though. It's people like Peter Thiel and Eric Schmidt. So these are the new rulers of the unofficial government of the Western world, which is the technocrats, the people who are in control of information. I think this is really looking to the future of dominating the public through the big tech giants like Google, like PayPal, you know, and using these as surveillance. Effectively, they're the kind of front end shop window, where they're not covers really. Twitter, Amazon, people like this, Facebook, obviously, for the National Security Agency and the securocrats, the security state, and that's how they're running things. The politicians are way down the food chain. The bankers are at the top. And you're talking really about your Peter Thiels and your Eric Schmidts are actually making policy. These are the people who are, I think, are saying, well, this is the way I don't know if you've come across this Palantir technology that Thiel has been running out.
No.
This is really being used, mass data trawling, which, of course, Kissinger has been doing for years, and collecting all this data, profiles on everybody on the planet, and using that to then manage society from behind the scenes. So all this stuff that we see on the news, night after night after night, is just a bit of theatre to keep the masses deluded and thinking that there's some kind of democracy, where actually it's really the tech giants. And it's interesting, I think, that people like Kissinger and Rockefeller have been handing the Bilderberg kind of gauntlet on, or the baton on, to these people. Nazis started Bilderberg. Let's just get that absolutely clear. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, plus various other characters that were involved in that right from the very start, including Peter Carrington, who was Lord Carrington, who's still alive. He was a chairman of Bilderberg for several years, and he was involved in throwing the Battle of Arnhem, the Bridge Too Far battle, in 1944. So, you know, these are the traitors, the Allied traitors that did deals for safe passage with the Nazis, set Bilderberg up 10 years after the end of the Second World War, and it's been very powerful and dominant. Doing most of the policy making, actually they do it, and then other governments just, you know, around Europe and the United States just pick it up in the NATO countries.
And implement it. Go to Bilderberg.org, folks. That's where you'll find out more about it. And as I said, thisweek.org.uk. Tony, as always, a pleasure, mate. Great program on BCFM, The Politics Show. Check it out, folks. It really is good. This is the sort of analysis you get. You don't get it on mainstream TV or radio.
I'll tell you what we are doing on Friday, which is a real full pulling apart of the Westminster attack, because that happened while I was away. So I'm really pulling that to pieces on Friday.
On Friday,
from 6 o'clock onwards.
We'll be tweeting that out on Friday. Tony, thanks again. Look after yourself.
Richie. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. The terrific Tony Gosling on the line to us there from Bristol.